A little bit of housekeeping, first of all. If you took the clipboard with questions, you'll find those questions will tally perfectly with the evening's sermon. But anyway, that was my hyper-efficiency, getting them all out there in good time. Anyway, there we are. Don't adjust your set. Well, we've been looking at this remarkable man, Elijah, prophet of God. And we've seen that he lived in rather tumultuous times in the northern province there, Israel, as we call it, the northern kingdom, where Ahab was king and Jezebel was his queen. And she, from Sidon, a worshipper of Baal, and brought all that false worship with her into Israel. And we saw a great showdown that took place on Mount Carmel and how the prophets of Baal tried all day, well on into the evening, to call fire down, see if Baal would answer them. But nothing happened. Of course, then Elijah prayed. God sent fire to consume the sacrifice and destroy the stonework of the altar and lap up all the water. And so it was quite a spectacular confirmation that God is the true God. And then we saw extraordinarily, didn't we, last time, how there was a losing perspective on the part of Elijah. And he ran for his life, fearing that now Jezebel was going to kill him, that he was all on his own, that he had no hope of surviving. And he went to a different mountain, to Mount Sinai, and waited on God. And God was kind to him, remember, provided for him some food, sent an angel to and some bread and some water to sustain him, keep him going. But he was in still a pretty poor shape when he came to Mount Sinai. And it reminded us that he's a man with a nature like ours. How like us that he kind of one moment was fine and the next moment was falling apart and lost perspective, didn't somehow think that now God could care for him. And so he had to learn that God would and did care for him. A picture of Mount Sinai, what we imagine it might look like. And there he is, as we read moments ago, appearing at the mouth of the cave to hear the still small voice, not the wind, not the earthquake, not the fire. God wasn't sort of coming, bringing some sort of crushing blow down upon his prophet in his time of need and weakness, but speaking to him very kindly. So that is where we left him last time. So just to remove some of these. And it brings us to today. And in fact, it's where we finished last time with the instructions that he'd been given. He's got to go to Syria, anoint a king there. And he's also, well, he's going to have, somebody's going to have, and that's our heading, an unexpected visitor. We'll see who that is exactly in a minute. But we find very often this. There's Elijah, his need. It wasn't the earthquake, and it wasn't the fire, and it wasn't the wind whereby God was going to speak to him, the still small voice. And this is how sometimes God answers our prayers. He provides people. He provides people. Because Elijah, in a sense, was in need of help. And God is in the business of finding help for his people. And often the help that he has for his people is in the shape of other people, friends, those who are part of our fellowship, other Christians, maybe miles and miles away they may be, but they are often the encouragement and the help that God provides. And here it is in Elijah's case that he provides him with help, with an encourager, with somebody who is now going to begin really to take over the work of being a prophet for him and enable him to be relieved of some of this burden which has really begun to crush him and eat away at him. Here is the man who it is to be from Abel Mahola, a man called Elisha. Elisha, the son of Shaphat. Well, what was Elisha doing? This is what he was doing at the time. He was with the oxen, plowing the field. He wouldn't have been thinking, today Elijah is going to come and he's going to cast his mantle over me and I am then going to be a prophet of God myself. And imagine he thought, well, this is a normal day and I'm out in the fields with the other men that were working here, we've got our 12 yoke of oxen, we're ploughing the fields, it's a busy time of the year, there's work to be done. Single man, and who obviously, as we learn, loved his parents, thought much of them, and wanted to bid them farewell before he set out on this new work that God was calling him to. And that was his morning. And his day was going to be a little bit different. An unexpected visitor. Something unexpected happens. That Elijah came. And I rather think Elisha would have known who Elijah was. Because Elijah, remember, he had thought, I am the only prophet, and they're trying to kill me. They've torn down your altars. They've broken your covenant. They've been unfaithful. I alone am the prophet of God. And the Lord had to correct him. Well, he knew that Obadiah had kept 50 prophets here, 50 prophets in the cave there. So that's 100. But there's more than that. There are 7,000 people in Israel who had not bowed the knee to Baal, not kissed him. And Elisha would have been one of them. He was one of the godly people who was trusting in the Lord, who would have hated what he saw in Ahab and the worship of Baal. He was one of those that Elijah seemingly had forgotten, didn't even know he existed. The Lord had to bring to his attention, you're not on your own. There are others. I have a people. I have 7,000. So wherever we might be, and however small we might feel that we are, the Lord has a people. He has a people. You may not see them. You may not be able to name them. You may not know who the other Elishas are out there, but they are there. Other countries, other places, cultures that we know very little about, other ethnicities, everything. And he has a people out there, just as he had Elisha. So Elisha would have known who Elijah was. He knew this is the prophet of God. And I expect he was a little bit shocked to see him there. What does this mean? If Elijah appears, well, something is going to happen. And for him to appear in his field on this particular day, this was hugely, hugely unexpected. And of course, then Elijah cast his mantle over Elisha, and he knew what that meant. That was a calling. He was being called now to be Elijah's servant, to understand and grow in that work of being in turn now a prophet of God. Elijah didn't know all the backstory, didn't know what did Elijah been doing, how he'd run away and Mount Sinai, and the Lord had met with him there and then spoken to Elijah to then go and speak to Elisha and anoint him to be prophet after him. But he was going to learn soon. So how often God provides people to help, take on the work, people to be an encouragement. It must have been an encouragement to Elijah to find this younger man here who had a heart for God and to discover that God had already been working in him. And far from being a sort of lackey of Ahab and Jezebel, I think it's wonderful that we've got all this Baal worship here, that Elisha himself was devoted to the Lord. It must have gladdened Elijah's heart. But that's how God works. And we read Romans chapter 16. All those names, all those people that Paul, as he thought of the church in Rome, and I expect he could have written even more names there. There were other people he probably could have mentioned if the Lord had not sort of stopped him at that point. Names, fellows, they worked hard, they risked their neck. Why, he was a Christian before me, that person there. There's somebody to esteem and to love. And that's part of what it means to be a Christian, that we're not in isolation. We might be in small churches and we might not have much happening out there in the wider culture, may not be responding too brilliantly to our outreach and our evangelism, but we've got each other. And not only our company here, but people in other churches. It's been interesting. And in a way, we always knew this would be critical to whether beyond the building here, we'd still be meeting in it in a year's time, or whether we've had to decant somewhere else, that we're but a small company. And we do what we can and raise what we can, and we have over our gift month. But then we look beyond, and other friends in other places just in the last couple of days have given generously towards this work here, towards the roof and the pointing and all that goes with that. God provides people, people who we've known over the years, people that we perhaps have encouraged or in some measure they're prayed for, and now they're helping us in our particular time of need. They're rising to that and feeling before God that, no, actually, we want to help. We want to help. People contact me. We want to help. Tell me, how do I help? Tell me where to send something off to. And it's happened. And, well, we've got some news upcoming there. I won't tell you all the church meeting coming up, but we've had some encouragements. We've had some encouragements. And just literally in the last couple of days, some encouragements. God provides people. He finds his people. And they often encourage each other. They're there for each other. They pray for each other. They help support each other. And if one is having a bit of a hard time or difficulty, then there are others who are reaching out to us. And that is all part of God's economy. So we might feel at times, hey, we're small. Oh, we feel as if we're on our own. We're not. We've got actually a lot of good friends out there, churches, good Christians who really think of us, who pray for us anyway. Indeed, the fact is we love to pray for them too. And we find, well, there is grace. So Elisha was provided for Elijah. Well, the work needs to go on. It surely does. But Elijah also needs a good friend, somebody to encourage him. And there it is. But of course, Elisha also needed to respond to his different day, his unexpected visitor. This something unexpected that's happened, but here is Elijah. Well, has he come in peace? Has he come to deliver some word of judgment here? Am I going to hear some stern rebuke? Oh, no, of course it isn't. He's been called to follow Elijah, to be a prophet of God. Well, how is that going to go? Well, Elisha knows perhaps a bit about Elijah. He knows what Ahab thinks of Elijah. And he rather thinks, well, that's what he thinks of Elijah. He's not going to think more of me if I'm Elijah's servant. I'm going to face opposition. I'm going to find people who just don't want to listen. I might find it, as he perhaps learns from Elijah what had happened and how Elijah had run. Well, these times may be difficult for me as well. I might feel some of the things that Elijah felt too. Do I really want to follow? Do I really want to go? Well, of course, the wonderful thing is that he did say, I will come with you. I will come with you. I want to bid farewell to my parents, and we're going to just sacrifice the oxen and use the equipment there for the fire. So in fellowship with my people in my own community and the people I work with, I'm going to bid them a proper farewell, and then that's it. I'm traveling on with you. He responded, didn't he, to that call to him, will you follow me? Of course, beyond Elijah, will you follow God? Will you come with him? Even though, well, see what Elijah had to face. There's trouble. They're not going to like what you're going to tell them. They sure are not. And there are plenty of people out there who make that known. Is he going to say, well, actually, I think I'll stay here in the field with the oxen. That's a bit safer. You know where you are with this kind of work, you know? Or will he follow? Well, there is. I will come with you. I will be now what is required for me to be, to serve God in my own generation, to be the person perhaps who succeeds you, Elijah, to carry that torch still, to wear that mantle of the prophet, all that it means, privilege that it is as well, to be able to speak the word of God to those with an ear to hear. So it goes out to you, doesn't it? It goes out to you. Do you hear? Do you follow? Do you respond to this? Will you say, as Elisha says, I will come with you? I know what it's going to mean, and I know this is going to be hard at times, but oh, to serve God, oh, to be his servant and to walk with him and to learn from you and to be able to follow in those ways of righteousness and holiness and be used by God in whatever way he will, it's worth it. It's worth it all. And he stood up and walked that walk. Do we have that from you? Is that your response today? Does something in you rise? We say, oh, I'll stay with the oxen. Thank you. I'll stay in the field here. And I've got plenty going on. I've got a kind of life in agriculture lined up here and try these new seeds and try to get a bit of improved growth. Is that more it? Or would you follow in those ways there? Who knows? You're the answer to the prayers of previous generations. Very touching at times to learn of people who prayed for us. And I know I had forebears, well, grandparents, generation beyond that, who are believers from the Potteries, Stoke-on-Trent, that area over there. And they loved the sorts of things that I love, the sort of Bible teaching that I love. And who knows, they prayed, did they? I imagine they did, for those who were to come. Well, here I am to this day. God provides people. Are you perhaps those people? Are you perhaps those who God is raising up to be those who will take on from us? And when we finish our race and when we can't run it anymore, will you be there? Will you be running that race? Will you be like Elisha saying, I will come with you. I want to follow. I want to serve the Lord myself. This means something to me. Well, that was Elisha. That was his unexpected visitor. Didn't see that coming, did he? They didn't know that was the next step for him. But he responded to it. Ah, will you respond as well? Because God provides people. We are the answer sometimes to other people's prayers as they are the answer to our prayers as well. Well, let's sing our closing hymn, Thou God of Truth and Love, 359.